So today we're looking at Unit 17. We're going to look at an open book question. It is question 4 amongst the open book questions. Preaching application. Identify general principles from Rishabdev accepting the feature of avidutta. With reference to chapter 5, verses 28 to 35, discuss the relevance for ISKCON membership of these principles. This come up in just over the last couple of weeks. How avidutta relates to ISKCON, and there are certain principles that we follow, and but certain things that we certainly avoid imitating. So we'll just draw some of the main principles from verses 28 to 35 of chapter 5, fifth canto. Text number 28. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus the great well-wisher of everyone, the Supreme Lord, Rishabdev, instructed his own sons, although they were perfectly educated and cultured. He instructed them just to set an example of how a father should instruct his sons before retiring from family life. Sannyasis, who are no longer bound by fruit of activity, and who have taken to devotional service, after all their material desires have been vanquished, also learn by these instructions. Lord Rishabdev instructed his 100 sons, of whom the eldest, Bharat, was a very advanced devotee and a follower of Vaishnavas. In order to rule the whole world, the Lord enthroned his eldest son on the royal seat. Thereafter, although still at home, Lord Rishabdev lived like a madman, naked and with dishevelled hair. Then the Lord took the sacrificial fire within himself and he left Brahmavarta to tour the whole world." It's a very nice statement, isn't it? He took the sacrificial fire within himself. And of course, the sacrificial fire is in fact the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so he's meditating upon the super soul within his heart and constantly making offerings to the Lord within his heart, the Lord of the sacrificial fire. Prabhupada mentioned his purport, that actually the instructions given by Lord Rishabdev, given to Lord Rishabdev's sons, were not exactly meant for his sons because they were already educated and highly advanced in knowledge. Rather, these instructions were meant for sannyasis who intend to become advanced devotees. Sannyasis must abide by Lord Rishabdev's instructions while on the path of devotional service. Lord Rishabdev retired from family life and lived like a naked madman even while still in his family. So, Lord Rishabdev has given instructions, meant for sannyasis who want to become advanced devotees. And Lord Rishabhdev, of course, is manifesting the pastimes of the most advanced devotee, and that we'll hear about now. After accepting the feature of Avaduta, a great saintly person without material cares, Lord Rishabhdev passed through human society like a blind, deaf and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost or a madman. Although people called him such names, he remained silent and did not speak to anyone. The word Avaduta refers to one who does not care for social conventions, particularly the Vanasram dham. However, such a person may be situated fully within himself and be satisfied with the Supreme Personality of Godhead on whom he meditates. In other words, one who has surpassed the rules and regulations of Vanasram dham is called Avaduta. Such a person has already surpassed the clutches of Maya and he lives completely separate and independent. So here, of course, Canto 5, chapter 5, verses 28 to 35.
Okay, so unit
17. Unit 17. And it is the fourth question.
Thank you.
So in this text number 29, there are some very important phrases. Bearing in mind the question, identify general principles from Rishabhdev, accepting the feature of Avaduta, and discuss the relevance for ISKCON membership of these principles. So one of the principles of the Avaduta is that they do not care for social conventions. And particularly the Vanasram dham. Especially the Vanasram dham. However, understanding of that statement would be that, oh, if such a person doesn't care for the Vanasram dham, then they do not care for that Vedic concept of surrender to the personality of Godhead. No. However, Prabhupada says that such a person may be situated fully within himself and be satisfied with the personality of Godhead on whom he meditates. So, the Avaduta may, if he's very advanced, be a great devotee of the Lord, meditating on the Supreme Lord. Not all Avadutas are Vaishnavas, some are impersonalists, and they meditate upon Brahman. Although the same principle is there, because they do not care for the Vanasram, does not mean that they do not care for the goal of Varnashram, which is attaining spiritual enlightenment, either from Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. But it doesn't mean that they don't care for that. That they do care for. Very important distinction between who is actual Abhiduta and who is not Abhiduta. In India, they may not be able to make that distinction, or many parts of the world, in fact. Such a person has already surpassed the clutches of Maya and he lives completely separate and independent. So, they're liberated. When I lived in New Zealand, I lived on a little island called Waiheke Island, and there was a Westerner who used to walk around in the orange or the saffron. He had no home, he had a stick, he had a bag, cloth bag with all his belongings at the end of the stick, and he'd walk around barefoot, and people thought that he was like an Abhiduta, or a great saintly person who was aloof from material nature, and they assumed that he was spiritually enlightened. So he appeared to be an Abhiduta, but because people did not know this fact, that the Abhiduta is someone who has surpassed. It's not someone who hasn't. Where's my? It's someone who has surpassed the Vedic rules and regulations. There's a big difference between someone, the Abhiduta, having gone through the Varnashram in this life or previous lives, and thus become so purified and liberated that they've surpassed. The rules and regulations, they don't need them anymore because they've reached the goals of all those rules and regulations. There's a difference between that person and someone who rejects the Varnashram, does not care for their rules and regulations, but has not attained the purification that the Varnashram offers. Big difference between having surpassed and just having rejected something that they actually required. Surpass the bonus round down. Very important distinction. In Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga progresses, you will see many Abhidutas popping up all over the world. And we will be able to point them out as rascals. But generally, even people from all sorts of spiritual or religious backgrounds, but to speak of materialists, will not be able to distinguish between a rascal posing as an Abhiduta and a real Abhiduta. They will have no ability. That also applies in ISKCON, where the ISKCON devotees also have the ability, because there are devotees who sometimes take this mood of an Abhiduta. I've seen some of them. And there's always a big question, is this person Abhiduta, they're so spiritually advanced, is there something wrong here? These are the criteria we have to examine. Okay, this person within ISKCON, an initiated devotee, sometimes disciples of Prabhupada, sometimes disciples of others. If they're rejecting the rules and regulations, have they surpassed the purificatory process of the Varnashrama, they're completely purified, means they should be liberated from the material clutches. There's no sex desire.
not bothered by hunger and thirst, pain, and always meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially within ISKCON, things like that. We're particularly looking at within ISKCON. Within ISKCON.
Discuss the relevance for ISKCON membership. Of course, we follow the mood of our previous acharyas and Srila Prabhupada.
It may be that we get the odd avaduta to come within our society. What would we do? Reject him? Yeah, you're not wanting. If you had a real avaduta, you know, what would we do? Reject him? No, no, we're sankirtan devotees. Yeah, no, but we accept him. It's like, who's it? Radha. Is it Radha Madha Babaji? That's Babaji. Vamsi Das Babaji.
He was
an avaduta and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Kaur had a few of his very mature devotees would sort of follow and sometimes, you know, try to render different services to Vamsi Das Babaji Maharaj to make sure that he didn't, you know, they would try and just discreetly not get him in his way or even being seen, but just make sure that there was food and this and that, and clean up around, you know, his, where he was staying, and, you know, different things, and make sure there's no dangers or anything like that. So, yeah, we certainly can't reject great souls. I mean, we've had, you know, there used to be here a member of the Christian community. He was a priest, very high up priest. He got initiated, and his name was Vidura. He used to come here with all his Christian robes and his big staff, you know, and but he was a full-time member of the Christian clergy. He was, you know, had a church and teach and everything, but he was also initiated this kind of work. So,
it's not that we reject such personalities.
But of course, you know, our training, the training we offer for devotees is... we generally don't train people to be avaduta. Some of them may naturally take that path. Maybe something there from previous lifetimes. Some of them may, you know, some avadutas from India may come across ISKCON and join ISKCON as well. But generally, you know, within ISKCON, you know, our training is the Gosyanandi. Avaduta is more Bhajana. My spiritual master said this because, in one sense, we also follow, you know, certain principles of Lord Rishabdev. The aspect of, we will see how it says here that, where's my book? My book over here, because I keep walking over here. My book's over. I walked over here every time, but the book's not there. So now I'm putting it there. If you see me walking over here to get my book, throw something at me. Okay, what the devil do? Hey? That's okay. No, I'll work out a system. But it says here that he remained silent and did not speak to anyone. So what do we do when we chant japa in the morning? We remain silent, we won't speak to anyone. It's chanting. People come up. Oh, Prabhu, you know, saw you yesterday. So, our spiritual master would say that, you know, we are bhajanam in the morning. During our sadhana. And Goshen only during the day when we're preaching. So we do follow aspects of Bhajananandi. We'll discuss the relevance for ISKCON membership of these principles. Do ISKCON members follow some of the principles of the Avaduta or Bhajanandi shown by Rishabdev? Yes, we do. When we perform our sadhana, you know, we, you know, preaching is when we're associating with non-devotees and others. Generally, Bhajanandi, we come in association with devotees who really want to chant, otherwise we're silent to the non-devotees. You know, we're not taking their association, not so much. So we do follow. And, you know, here's another aspect, living separately and independent. Here are some of the principles. It says, remain silent and do not speak to anyone, or Prabhupada puts it, live separate and independent. So, other ways that we do that, you know, being silent, not speaking to others, we even practice that to a degree when we're preaching. Because our silence means we'll only speak about Krishna, otherwise we're silent. But that's another way that we're not speaking to others. We won't discuss material topics. We're only interested in, you know, things that we can somehow relate to helping people become Krishna conscious. That is also Manabrata. Manabrata means Manabrata. And that is another way of being living separately and independent. You know, we come to the temple. We don't go to the hotels. We don't go to the, you know, nightclubs. We don't go to the, you know, parties like that. So in many ways, we are following them. But there is a very distinct sankirtan parameter in the way that we follow Lord Rishabhdev.
Text number 30. Rishabhdev began to tour through cities, villages, mines, countrysides, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens, the homes of cowherd men, transient hotels, hills, forests and hermitages. Wherever he travelled, all bad elements surrounded him. Just as flies surround the body of an elephant coming from a forest. He was always being threatened, beaten, urinated upon and spat upon. Sometimes people threw stones, stool and dust at him, and sometimes people passed foul air before him. Sounds like the old days doing sankirtan. Hey, no, I'm sankirtan. Thus people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble. But he did not care about this, for he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform and being in his spiritual glory, he did not care for all these material insults. In other words, he completely understood that matter and spirit are separate and he had no bodily conception. Thus, without being angry at anyone, he walked through the whole world alone. Now, again, as we see, as Prabhupada so often does, you know, it becomes obvious to us that these Avadhuta teachings and example of Lord Rishabhdev are also meant for us to practice within our sankirtan movement. And Prabhupada quotes these verses from the Bhagavad Gita, which we're applying. So he is applying, and we're applying the same. Matras pasastu kuntaya satosma sukadekvada agamapayan onichas samstik tiksasvabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and the disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception of Sahana Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So definitely, we follow that very important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, and Rishabhdev follows the exact same verse from the Bhagavad Gita. So there's no way that someone can say we don't follow Rishabhdev, or we shouldn't follow Rishabhdev.
Kali Yuga, is this applicable? Because it says that, you know, chanting alone is enough, and chanting in four regulated things like that. So how far is this applicable? Because it's, we are trying
well,
to imitate.
Well, Lord Chaitanya says if you don't practice this verse of tolerance, you won't be able to chant. So chanting's enough, but if there's no tolerance, there's no chanting. So, you know, let's have a look at this part. Now, I mentioned before, in the early days, when we went out on Harinam, you know, I've seen devotees set on fire, myself, many times being spat on,
things thrown, and trying to punch in the head, you know, called foul names, thrown all sorts of things at you. Now, when you went out on Arenal, if you weren't prepared to tolerate that, then you just give it up. As many people did. And what was the principle of tolerance? That, okay, they're, you know, the body is being mistreated, but I'm not that body. I'm an eternal spirit soul, these things can't really affect me. And in order to, you know, you see that it is a test of whether you really think you're the body or whether you actually think you're the soul. And if someone spits at you for chanting Hare Krishna, if you think you're the body and you really don't understand that you're the spirit soul, it'll be tested. Especially if it, you know, happens. So, this verse from Bhagavad Gita, 2:14, as was followed by Rishabhdev. Is that you? We follow the same verse. Tolerance. Now, the point being that whether you're following the path of Navaduta, Rajinanandi, or whether you're following the path of a Goshinandi preacher, or whether you're following the path of Buddhism, or whether you're following the path of impersonalism, everyone who wants to rise above the bodily concept of life must practice tolerance. It's the exact same principle. Without tolerance, it is very difficult, it is not possible to actually become liberated in the clutch of the mind. And therefore, what is the next verse? Krishna says to Arjuna that, you know, one who is able to tolerate, you know, the happiness and the stress, you know, the dualities of happiness and stress, etc., they're eligible for liberation. A person that develops tolerance, they're eligible for liberation. And the person who doesn't develop tolerance is not eligible for liberation. So therefore, we follow the Avaduta Rishabhdev 100%. We don't imitate him, but we 100% follow him. It's the same verse of the Bhagavad Gita which we're following, tolerance. It is, so therefore, and in Kali Yuga, where everything is disturbed, it becomes even more essential to follow the principles of tolerance as shown by Rishabhdev than perhaps in Satya Yuga. Actually, if you can preach Krishna consciousness in Kali Yuga for one lifetime, it's probably more difficult than sitting silently in meditation in Satya Yuga. Very hard.
And, you know, one, just like Srila Prabhupada,
Prabhupada once said, he said, you know, they asked him why he went to New York. He said, because my spiritual master ordered me. He said, if you hadn't asked me to go to the forest, I would have gone. He would have practiced. But every spiritual master would ask, he would have practiced. practice the same thing.
Whether you're preaching or whether you go to the forest, it's the same teaching. Now, the second part of the verse is that as far as Risha Dave is concerned, it has already been explained. He did not at all possess a material body, and therefore he was tolerant of all trouble offered to him by the bad elements in society. He could tolerate people throwing stool and dust upon him and beating him. His body was transcendental and consequently did not at all suffer pain. He was always situated in his spiritual bliss. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 1861, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridyase ajantisati brahmayam sarvabhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Since the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, he is in the heart of hogs and dogs also. If hogs and dogs in their material bodies live in filthy places, one should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his Paramatma feature, also lives in a filthy place. Although Lord Rishabhdev was maltreated by the bad elements of the world, he was not at all affected. Therefore, it is stated, he was situated in his own glory. He was never saddened due to being insulted in the many ways described above. Now, of course,
there was tolerance. Why? Because he was on the spiritual platform. You know, being situated in his spiritual body. Now, of course, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his spiritual body is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But as stated in this verse,
you see in the previous verse, this one, even Prabhupada, in the first part of the purport, it says, when a person fully realizes that the material body and world are temporary, he is not concerned with pain and pleasures of the body. So, for us, we also identify ourselves as a spirit soul. Here when he's talking about the Abhidhutas, such a person may be situated fully within himself and be satisfied with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he understands he's a spirit soul and he's also meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if one understands that the Lord is situated within our body and he is not in a filthy or contaminated or disturbed circumstance, and we are with that Lord in that same spiritual Vaikuntha Dham within the heart, then we are also situated in our spiritual body, and that gives us the ability also to tolerate. So it applies to us and the Lord, both compact, as Prabhupada said, within a compact of love. So we practice the same thing. We practice tolerance. As Lord Chaitanya says, my only desire is to be situated like a speck of dust at your lotus feet. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya is that we practice tolerance because we consider ourselves a tiny fragmental part of the Lord and his eternal servitor. So we are situated in that spiritual identity, and because of that we can practice tolerance. So once again, as he is doing, we also do. And there are many circumstances within this world where devotees have, you know, they've been beaten, they've been threatened, they've been urinated upon, they've been spat upon. A lot of devotees in this movement, I think I've had just about all of them. The longer you're around, the luckier you are. If you haven't experienced some of this nectar, keep preaching. He didn't become angry at anyone. He walked through the whole world alone. That's an interesting statement there as well. You know, matter and spirit are separate. They exist side by side, and yet they never touch. No. They're always side by side, they never touch. It's like the past and the future. Always side by side, but they never touch. Therefore, you know, although materialistic persons are there, in one sense, because you're with, you know, because they're not with you in the spiritual world, you're alone there. You're separate from them. They're in the material world, and you're alone, you're in the spiritual world with the Lord within the heart. Separate. Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, he used to say, I am alone in this world serving Krishna. And he had his disciple Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there were other Babajis who were good friends, but he would say that, I'm alone in this world serving Krishna. Prabhupada used to put it this way, that in this world everyone flies their own plane. On the spiritual platform, everyone flies their own plane. People can give you a little help on the ground, but ultimately you're flying your plane. You've got to get to the destination by yourself. There may be planes all around you, but you are alone. You go down, none of the other planes can help. Got to make it to your destination alone. No one's holding your hand. See? Yeah, on the spiritual paths are like that. Each one of us, we have to individually, alone, get back to the spiritual world. So, you know. So that mood is also there. That sense of being alone, even though we are part of the congregational movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Still, we're all flying our own separate planes back to the spiritual world. You know, in another sense, you know, when we meditate upon the Lord within the heart, you know, if you're out on Sankirtan and people are harassing you and, you know, causing you so much problem, you know, victimizing you because you're a Hare Krishna trying to preach. You know, you remember the personality of Godhead within your heart. And while you're, you know, looking within your heart, you know, you don't see the other devotees running around in your heart as well. It's you and God. You know, no one else is there. In that sense also, you know, you're alone. When you take shelter of the Lord within your heart, each devotee is taking shelter of the Lord within their heart. This is, you're alone with the Lord in your heart. So, you know, in another sense, you're alone. So we follow that principle. We're situated in the spiritual body, and you know, we're associating with the Lord in our heart. And it's a private, you know, Buddha yoga, isn't it? It's a private communion. In that sense, we're alone. You know, when we're offering prayers to the Lord within our heart, there's no one editing what we're saying or telling us we can't say that. You know, we can say what we like, you know, in the mood we like, we are there. So in that sense, we are following that, going through this world alone, despite the fact that we're part of the sankirtan movement. We're all flying our own plane. So as you can see, many ways people may, even within, you know, ISKCON, perhaps disregard a lot of things that may be in this section of the Bhagavatam is not particularly relevant to us as teachers. But that would be wrong. That would be a misunderstanding of the Bhagavatam. And, you know, this, of course, why we're doing this is because, you know, when we're giving classes or talking to people, if these verses come up in class, then we're supposed to speak on this verse. And sometimes what I see devotees do is that they'll look at the verse and think, oh, that's, you know, that's Rishi Dave, that's sort of not really relevant to us. And I'll sort of skim through a few verses till they find something, oh, this is more relevant to the devotees, like that. When you get a verse in the Bhagavatam to speak on, you should consider the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to say this. I am his mouthpiece, and I have to make sure that it's presented properly. He's given me the opportunity. The Lord wants the devotees to meditate upon this. For he understands that, you know, certain moods and incidences and events are happening within the community, within the lives of individuals, and this particular thing, if meditated upon, will solve that problem and set the right path. for the community, for the individuals, like that. Here's another way that we can take it, you know, being alone. Can someone actually interfere with your relationship with the Lord? No. Because you're alone with the Lord in the heart. No one else can get in there. It's a locked bolt. You and the Lord, that's it. Everyone's locked out. Can someone interfere? Sometimes when in the, you know, one of the reasons we do the disciples course is because sometimes different factions and groups and cliques and what have you, sprout up. You know, sometimes it, you know, we've seen in the movement, you know, that there's histories where, you know, the Sankirtan devotees against everyone else, and the temple devotees versus the Sankirtan devotees, they're all in Maya, and we're at that, and then the temple devotees are against the Sankirtan devotees because they sort of just barge into a temple and do all these things and disappear. You know, all the pujaris, you know, thinking there's, you know, more purified than the, you know, Sankirtan devotees who are, you know, impure because they're out in the streets preaching. Or, you know, the disciples of this Maharaj, you know, we've really got it together, and the disciples of that Maharaj, you know, they're like, you know, what's going on there? And they're not really welcome in our group, in our Vyasa Pujas and, you know, things. And, the Hindus and the Westerners and, you know, they're all, you know, they're all sorts of different, the Grihasthas and the Brahmacharis, you know. There are different, sometimes different groups within ISKCON oppress other groups, the men and the women. You know, and they can be in some temples, you know, I've seen it, certain groups or individuals can be completely suppressed and victimized by other, powerful sort of forces within that temple. But actually, no one can do anything. No one can really, you know, a devotee, they're situated alone. No one can enter in between that relationship between the devotee and the Lord that is there within their heart. No one can get in there. Only mentally you can allow people in. But spiritually, no, you cannot.
About Rupa Goswami when he was meditating and he saw some lame person passing by. He was smiling because of his meditation on Krishna. So. But the person misunderstood, and because of that he lost the ecstasy for some time. So just want to understand what is that connection to this.
You're saying Rupa lost that ecstasy because the person...
Yeah, he felt offended, but he didn't have intention of offending.
Yeah. The person walking past. Yeah. He didn't have that, yeah. You're saying Rupa misunderstood him?
No, so Rupa Goswami, he was meditating.
Yeah.
And in his meditation, he was smiling at the Lord or some other...
Rupa was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the passerby thought he was laughing at him or smiling at him, looking at his disability.
Yeah.
And then he felt offended. Then Rupa Goswami, he actually invited all the people and hosted a feast and identified who the person was who was offended because he didn't turn up.
Right.
So that's how it was.
Well, similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he... meditated when he was in great ecstasy and performing kirtan in the house of Srivasta Kaur, etc. If there were people who were not very conversant with, mature ways and sentiments of elevated devotees, he would immediately come out of whatever ecstatic, mood or meditation he was in and become very sober. but it was not for it was not that it's like a response because for their protection, you know, when someone is on the spiritual platform experiencing certain ecstatic symptoms or emotions, if someone misunderstands that situation, that person can cause offence by becoming offended, or you know whatever, they can cause offence, so they can criticise, and therefore devotees and the Lord themselves, they would, you know, purposely when you know persons who are not able to, you know, understand, oh, here the Lord's having ecstatic symptoms, or this devotee's having ecstatic symptoms, if they're not able to do that, there's the high potential that there would be some criticism because the behaviour is inappropriate to the world around them. And therefore, they would usually immediately come out of that meditation or that particular ecstasy for the benefit of the other person. That's generally what would happen. So, it's not...
So he didn't get affected by it, but it was to benefit the others who may...
Yeah, misunderstand and become critical. Because generally ecstatic symptoms to the Lord who's within their heart, your behaviour isn't appropriate to everything else that's going on in your environment. So generally there'll be some criticism. The difference with the avadutas is that, you know, whereas the preachers, Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, they will react like that because they're in the mood of preachers. Generally, the avadutas will not change, even though someone may become offended at their behaviour, that it's strange, it's weird, it doesn't fit in. In this mood, because they're not necessarily, you know, preaching in that respect, they're preaching in one way, but they're not necessarily the people around them at that time. They just remain in whatever ecstatic mood or, you know, ecstatic symptom or transcendental activities they're involved in. They don't change. But in our line, we do. So, it's a good point. Let's flip the ball. So... let's list that as one of the ways, one of the things where we don't follow Rishabha. Right? That so that's a good example. So we've got Risha he would not change his transcendental mood or activities despite the people in his environment. we discussed this last week, right? There was some comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti before that he did change his mood and his activities in the case with Rahugana. Okay? He gave him instruction. Why? Because he felt that he was able to hear that instruction where others were. So, so he wouldn't change unless he could explain. To someone who was enlightened and intelligent, spiritual. For us, following the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'd say, you know, Lord Chaitanya and his followers. We do monitor our external behavior, our behavior and emotions. According to the environment. Big difference. What's that?
Unless he could explain to
the intelligent, someone who's intelligent. For us, they don't really have to be intelligent. You know, in other words, if we waited for someone to be intelligent for us to say, oh, let's preach to this person, we might have waited a long time. So, we don't wait because we just give people prasad and invite them to chant Hare Krishna. Or we'll speak to them on a very simple platform. And we're not trying to explain the activities as Rishabdev put it, of a why Paramahamsa is doing what he's doing. We just need to explain a few simple facts. You know, we're a spirit soul, we're not the body. You belong to the spiritual world, you eat prasadam, chant Hare Krishna, you become liberated, go back to God. Very simple. Right. So, as we've seen, there's another side of this board, Shweta. On this side, all the ways we do follow Lord Rishabdev. On this one, we've started the ways we don't. Imitate him, or we have some significant differences because we're part of the Sankirtan movement.
But he did, when he was a king, he did preach to his sons.
Yeah, that was before he took up the ways of the Avaduta. So, this one here is. Especially, once he took up those ways of an Avaduta, what are those principles that may be relevant for ISKCON to follow or to not adopt or to. Lord Rishabdev's hands, feet and chest were very long. His shoulders, face and limbs were all very delicate and symmetrically proportioned. His mouth was beautifully decorated with his natural smile, and he appeared all the more lovely with his reddish eyes spread wide like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower covered with dew in the early morning. The irises of his eyes were so pleasing that they removed all the troubles of everyone who saw him. His forehead, ears, neck and nose and all other features were very beautiful. His gentle smile always made his face beautiful, so much so that he even attracted the hearts of married women. It was as though he had been pierced by the arrows of Cupid. About his head was an abundance of curly, matted brown hair. His hair was dishevelled because his body was dirty and not taken care of. He appeared as if he were haunted by a ghost. So here we see the features of the personality of Godhead, of course, that even when he's dirty and not taken care of, he still maintains his unlimited beauty. So and of course, you know, Lord Rishadev is the personality of Godhead. Even if dirty or neglected. Next verse, verse 32. When Lord Rishabhdev saw that the general populace was very antagonistic to execution of mystic yoga, he accepted the behaviour of a python in order to counteract their opposition. Thus he stayed in one place and laid down. While laying down, he ate and drank, and he passed stool and urine and rolled in it. Indeed, he smeared his whole body with his own stool and urine so that the opposing elements might not come and disturb him. Purport. According to one's destiny, one enjoys allotted happiness and distress, even though one keeps himself in one place. This is the injunction of the Shastras. When one is spiritually situated, he may stay in one place and all his necessities will be supplied by the arrangement of the Supreme Controller. Unless one is a preacher, there is no need to travel all over the world. A person can stay in one place and execute devotional service suitably according to time and circumstance. When Rishabhdev saw that he was simply being disturbed by travelling throughout the world, he decided to lay down in one place like a python. Thus he ate, drank, and he passed stool and urine and smeared his body with them so that people might not disturb him. Translation. Because Rishabhdev remained in that condition, the public did not disturb him, but no bad aroma emanated from his stool and urine. Quite the contrary, his stool and urine were so aromatic that they filled 80 miles of the countryside with a pleasant fragrance. From this, We can certainly assume that Lord Rishabhdev was transcendentally blissful. His stool and urine were so completely different from material stool and urine that they were aromatic. Even in the material world, cow dung is accepted as purified and antiseptic. A person can keep stacks of cow dung in one place, and it will not create a bad odour to disturb anyone. We can take it for granted that in the spiritual world, stool and urine are also pleasantly scented. Indeed, the entire atmosphere became very pleasant due to Lord Rishabhdev's stool and urine. We can take it for granted in the spiritual world, stool and urine are also pleasantly scented. We know that little Krishna, when he was a little baby, just to disturb the mothers in the other house, he would sometimes go into their homes and pass stool and urine behind their doors. But it's it would have, although they complained, it would have been quite a nice fragrance in the home. So, you know, their complaint wasn't, you know, it was just an opportunity to have a chat with Mother Yashoda in a distant way. We better write this down before some of our preachers start following these things. Is the Supreme Person have got it? Well, let's say, you know, he's got a spiritual body. Either way, he's the Supreme Person of Godhead. Always attractive, even if dirty or neglected. Now, and he's still in Europe. And fragrant. In this way, Lord Rishabhdev followed the behaviour of cows, deers and crows. Sometimes he moved or walked, and sometimes he sat down in one place. Sometimes he lay down, behaving exactly like cows, deer and crows. In that way he ate, drank, passed all the urine, and cheated the people in this way. As Prabhupada said, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev possessed a transcendental spiritual body. Since the general public could not appreciate his behaviour and mystic yogi practice, he began to disturb them. To cheat them, he behaved like crows, cows and deer. The last verse, I came for it, just to show all the yogis the mystic process, Lord Rishabhdev, the partial expansion of Lord Krishna, performed wonderful activities. Actually, he was the master of liberation and was fully absorbed in transcendental bliss, which increased 1,000-fold. Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, is the original source of Rishabhdev. There is no difference in their constitution, and consequently, Lord Rishabhdev awakened the loving symptoms of crying, laughing, and shivering. He was always absorbed in transcendental love. Due to this, all mystic powers automatically approached him, such as the ability to travel in outer space at the speed of mind, to appear and disappear, to enter the bodies of others, and to see things far, far away. Although he could do all this, he did not exercise these powers. Now, Prabhupada mentions in his purport about the word shanta means completely peaceful. Unless all one's desires are fulfilled, one cannot be peaceful. Now, most people
have desires that they cannot fulfill, and therefore they're not peaceful. Only the devotees can be peaceful. Why? Because their only desire is serving the Lord, and they're fully dependent upon the mercy of Krishna, and Krishna is Yogeshwara, the possessor of all mystic powers, and he is Atman, fully satisfied. He gives some of the, as an example, what some of the yogis can do. When the body becomes old, a perfect yogi can find a young, able body, give up his old body, and the yogi can enter into the young body and act as he pleases. We get these personalities. Some yogi power, and but at the same time, you see, they quite often fulfill many material aspirations. And it would appear that in some cases, some yogi may have entered their body. Being a plenary expansion of Lord Vasudeva, Lord Rishabhdev possessed all these mystic yoga powers, but he was satisfied with his devotional love of Krishna, which is evinced by the ecstatic symptoms such as crying, laughing and shivering. Okay, so let's look at some of these things again. On this, yeah. As devotees, if we were dirty, neglectful, and you know, long hair, and what have you, we would actually attract more opposition. Because we don't remain attractive when we're dirty. And our stool and urine don't smell like roses. Sometimes someone asks Papa, how do you know when you're pure devotee? When you know you're pure devotee when your stool smells like roses. So, until that time, we have to be very careful. Therefore, we shave our hair. You know, Prabhupada mentions the transcendentalists, they either keep their hair long and matted and they don't, you know, do anything to it, or they shave it. Because we're preachers, we shave our hair. Keep it clean and tight. Very important for preaching. So we do not imitate Rishabhdev in his neglect of the body or, you know, dirty features. Right? We don't imitate. Yeah, there was a devotee up on Imawulumba, probably well known to most people. I won't mention his name, but you know, he daily used to bathe in cow urine.
Cow urine.
Cow urine.
Cow urine.
He used to collect, I mean, he had a whole bathtub of it. And he'd bathe in there for a long time. And when he used to come in as a pujari to do the deities, you could be up the other end of the room, the temple room, and you would smell it. Who's that? I'll tell you later. That he, you know, a lot of his activities were like that. He used to look after the cows. Last time I went there, I didn't see him, but he was there for many, many, many years. So every day he would bathe in the cow. You could smell him from 30, 40 yards away,
so
coming up the hill.
He wouldn't use water?
It wouldn't matter. He's, you know, whatever he did, you know, he just smelled completely like cow urine. Now, as Prabhupada mentions there, you know, generally, you know, a little bit of cow urine around the house is okay, but, you know, when that's like a strong fragrance, you know, you've been bathing in it, soaking in it for hours. You know, it's overpowering. But, you know, sometimes you put a little bit of, you know, when you're cleaning the floor, you put a little lemon or a little something. But you put the whole bottle in and you walk in the room, it's like too much. So he was like that. So, you know, it was very... I mean, for someone who didn't know he was bathing in cow urine, you know, some guests, they might have just thought he was just bathing in his own urine. They wouldn't know. What's going on with this? And then he's on the altar, and he's like, you know. But they wouldn't know whether maybe, you know, he hadn't washed his socks or something, you know, because they may not be able to distinguish why did he smell. He's got his body over.
But is it okay? Nobody objected? Or?
Well, a lot of people did object. You know, devotees. You know, it was a controversial sort of thing. But, you know, he was a very nice devotee. And so he sort of lasted it out for a long time. But I don't know. I didn't see him last time I was up there. So he was like that. He was just in his own complete world. Generally, we don't. It's not a good preaching technique, you know.
How can you do that in Melbourne? Or will go away from
Melbourne?
You can't meditate like that in
Melbourne. You only come from RFC. Well, that's right. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, we don't, in the name of being, say, you know, if people cause us trouble, if we go out on Sankirtan, people are a bit hostile. The next time we go out covered in stool, we want, you know, there you go, come across this side of the street, give us some trouble today. No, it's not going to work either. So, you know, there are some things we are not going to do. But, this, you know, position of the python, there are things that we do follow, the python. Now, not all of us are travelling all over the world, following, preaching Krishna consciousness. But, therefore, you know, we tend to stay in one place with our homes. But, why is because we have the understanding that according to one's destiny, our happiness and distress are already allotted. So, you know, devotees will generally make a decision. You know, let me live somewhere within the vicinity. I can do some service at the temple and associate with others. you know, I've sometimes, you know, for non-devotees, like I've done astrology tasks and what have you, they will, you know, travel, you know, quite considerably, you know, to remote parts of the world or to remote countrysides or what have you, but there's no temple, no association. They don't have this confidence that their good fortune, you know, their happiness and distress is already allotted. So that's one thing we do follow. We'll just, you know, stay put as devotees, you know, where we have association, we have temples. And somehow a job will come in that area and, you know, home will come, family, everything like that. So we follow that. Everything is there. We follow that principle. One of the things I quite often, well, I've mentioned to my daughters who have asked me, and different people who I do astrological sessions with, that, you know, on the you know, that question of income, you know, you can you know, follow that type of work which you feel you'd be best suited to and happy doing. Because your wealth will come to you, it's already allotted, so therefore why take up a job or an allotment, you know, a job or a type of work that you're not suited to, you don't like doing, it's too difficult because it's not your type of thing. For instance, someone who's may not have a huge amount of physical strength, why take up a hard job of labour because you need the money? You know, better off that, you know, knowing that I can't work all my life or many years in hard labour, like physically I can't do it. We follow the principle here of the python. I would rather wait for what I'm actually properly suited for, and it will come. You know, the home will be maintained, the family will be maintained. It doesn't mean that you know, we're not like, you know, in one sense the python that, you know, like Prabhupada tells the story from Pancha, the different stories told to the children. Pancha. You know, if the lion, Prabhupada says the lion is the, you know, strongest animal in the forest, but he can't just lie there with his mouth open and wait for a rabbit to come and jump in. So, you know, that side of it is also there. He has to endeavour. But what it means is he doesn't have to, you know, the lion doesn't have to climb trees eating berries and then he won't have any food. He has to endeavour in his own way. He doesn't have to try and cook up some soup or some local spinach or anything. So it's not like that. one still has to work, so it's not like I'll lay down like the python, I'll do nothing, my job will come one day, someone will call me. Hi, hello. Yes, we've got just the job for you. Oh, I didn't even know you existed. I wasn't even applying for a job. Yes, no, we've been searching for someone just like you. It's not going to happen like that. It means that, one endeavours, but for the things that they're properly suited for. So we don't follow this Python philosophy foolishly, like the lion waiting for the rabbit to jump in its mouth. But we do follow it. Let us stay near the temple, you've got association, we'll do some service, go to the festivals. And we'll make as much endeavour as we can to become qualified and to find work which is suitable for my life as a devotee. Gives me some time as a devotee. Not that I get a job that I get a very small pay and it takes up all my time and energy. Let me find some job, gives me flexibility as a devotee. Like that. That's what I want. But endeavour for it. It's not going to just fall in the mouth. So that's how to follow the philosophy of the python. So as you can see, this can be misunderstood in different ways. One, oh, we don't follow that at all. Or two, yes, we follow it, but in a foolish way. Yeah, but actually, we do follow it. We do follow it. But they don't. When a devotee says we don't follow it, is because they haven't understood how we follow it, and therefore we don't follow it. Like, the way I'm thinking to follow it, don't anyone do that. Doesn't work. But we do follow it. And Prabhupada mentions it here. So, when you get to the 11th canto, you would assume that someone who's giving class in the 11th canto has read the 5th canto. And in the 5th canto here, Prabhupada says, he explains the philosophy of the python, which applies to everyone. And that is, according to one's destiny, one enjoys allotted happiness and distress, even though one keeps himself in one place. That philosophy applies to everyone. And this is the injunction of the sastras. When he is spiritually situated, he may stay in one place and all his necessities will be supplied by the arrangement of the Supreme Controller. And as we see in the next verse, because he was situated in such transcendental ecstasy, all the mystic powers automatically approached him. Even in the second canto, it says when a devotee becomes, situated on the path of bhakti, that they become, enriched with mystic powers and transcendental knowledge and different things. That's the second canto also. A devotee has to understand they're in a different category. If a devotee does not understand Srimad Bhagavatam, they may act like a kami, chasing their wealth in different places where they don't need to.
Because how did the Avatar Brahman come to the level of...
They may obstruct their devotional service when they don't need to.
How did the Avatar Brahman come to the level of not caring that people were abusing him and being so... That's quite incredible that he said that my distress comes only from my mind, not from these people who are behaving.
Yeah.
Not even from my own karma, but it's coming from my mind.
Yeah, he didn't associate himself with the body. It depends, for us, it would depend upon how much our body becomes spiritualized. His body, of course, is spiritual.
For us, it would depend upon how much our body becomes spiritualized. So we are a spirit soul. Still, we have some connection with the body, but the body itself can become spiritualized, or, you know, to a significant degree as well. And a spiritualized body means that, you know, there are certain mystic properties about a devotee's body.
But still, it's, on the one hand, we say that that's a very high level, but on the other hand, that's a level that we need to aspire for.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We need to, you know, spiritualize our body, and also, you know, always be meditating that we're a spirit soul within, and that we're also accompanied by the Supreme Lord within our heart, and to be really fixed up in that consciousness. You know, that consciousness, the mark of someone, you know, Arjuna asked the question, you know, one situated transcendentally, how does he walk, how does he sit, how does he talk? You know, if one is actually situated transcendentally, that transcendentalist is able, will actually function in a different way from someone who's not transcendentally situated. Rishabdev is functioning in a different way to others. No one can do that. No one can do what Rishabdev does unless you're on the spiritual platform. You know, no one can, you know, engage in the practice of determined devotional service, preaching Krishna consciousness with great tolerance, unless there's some, you know, inner strength from one's, you know, love of God and spiritual realizations like that. So, in fact, you know, there is a definite ratio or concomitant with our level of spirituality, our body will function in a spiritual way. You know, it can't be imitated. Just like a devotee asked me the other day that, you know, one should accept anxiety. You know, in Krishna consciousness, you know, anxiety is a cause of stress and disease. And he was saying that, but sometimes, you know, we accept anxiety in our devotional service. Wouldn't that be the cause of disease? But I was explaining to him that if a devotee accepts a significant amount of anxiety and stress in their devotional life in order to push on the Sankirtan movement, if they're not situated with significant spiritual advancement, that stress will actually manifest as material diseases and problems like that. Therefore, no one can imitate you know, a very strong preaching, you know, advanced devotee, because one would actually have to accept, you know, significant stress without the transcendental realizations, and it would just, you know, affect the material body in a very harsh way. You know, so it can't be imitated. So you can't endure, you can't tolerate or endure pain or difficulties in the Sankirtan movement without, you can only do that to the degree you have that spiritual advancement. You can't do it artificially, and that means that no one can actually imitate a devotee above their platform. It's not possible, and therefore Prabhupada says it's very dangerous to imitate an advanced devotee. If someone, and we get this, that, you know, I see this, you know, in this temple and many other temples. that because many, we have a lot of people coming to our movement, more so than previous. And sometimes they can be around for, you know, 5, even 10 years or what have you without really accepting a lot of training. You know, for 4 or 5 of those years they might have just come to the Sunday feast and yet they're considered a devotee who's been around 4 or 5 years. Even though for that time they've really just come to the Sunday feast. So when someone asks them how long they've been around, oh, 4 or 5 years. Yeah. How many Sunday feasts are there in four or five years? Let's say 5 years. Right? There's 52 Sunday feasts if you go to all of them. Well, let's reduce that by, you know, make it 2/3. So let's make it, say, 30. So you go to 30 Sunday feasts, you know, over, say, 5 years, maybe a few festivals, make it 35. 5 times 35, 15, 100, 175, you know, 180. How many days in a year? 365. Person been around for 6 months. You know, four or five years now, really, is someone's been around for 6 months. 4 or 5 years in the old days, man, you were there 7 days a week for 4 or 5 years. 4 or 5 years now means you've been there for 6 months. You come and enjoy the Sunday feast, have a bit of a social, and go home. And that's 4 or 5 years. You know, and if you can chant Hare Krishna for at least a year, you take initiation. And sometimes if they're lacking vijayas, another year later you've got Brahma. And then you may be doing a little bit of service here and there. So then those devotees take a position. And they actually become quite proud of their position very quickly. Oh, now I'm, you know, this, that and the other and, you know, what have you. Especially, you know, sometimes through marriage, sometimes through this, sometimes through that. They become, you know, quickly elevated. And, but the problem is that really they're not an advanced devotee. That's just the fact of it. The training hasn't been there. There hasn't been year in, year out on the street sankirtan. There hasn't been even day in, day out, you know, real hard service. We really got to sacrifice, you know, it's like a great difficulty to do that service that day, you know. Not a lot of that has been there, none of it. But then those people are in the position of an advanced devotee and it's very dangerous because they're actually not advanced devotees. And therefore, they can't accept the stress and the anxiety and the difficulties associated with an advanced devotee and they actually will suffer the consequences of that. They will not absorb it. They're in the position of an advanced devotee. And the actual stress of being in that position, fighting Maya on that platform, they will not be able to absorb that and it will cause them all sorts of troubles. So it's very dangerous. Apart from that, if they begin to commit offences because of their pride to other advanced devotees, thinking they've suddenly jumped up above so many other people, then they've got real problems. But actually, there's a lot of that around. Now, so let's just put that down. Here's another thing with Lord Rishabha. We should carefully note. One, don't imitate one, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or a Paramahamsa. Now, Lord Rishabdev, he's showing the he just to show all the yogis and all the yogis the mystic process. He's showing these wonderful activities. So there are many yogis who claim to, you know, be very elevated yogis. You've got your Sai Babas, and you've got, you know, Bhagavan Rajneesh, and, you know, this one and that one.
They take someone's name who's famous, and although they're doing something else, people know the name and they pay attention to the person. Like Sai Baba and Sai Baba.
Yeah, they have different.
Yeah. So just once they, otherwise no one would ever think of him. They call him, you know, something else. I won't mention different names. I'd like to call him. But, you know, don't imitate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. To lie down as a python, you know, this also indicates that he is completely self-sufficient and self-satisfied. This is another thing that we can take as devotees. Self-sufficient. You know, basically independent and self-satisfied. Now, Krishna mentions that in the Bhagavad Gita as well. Devotees should be like this. Devotees should be self-sufficient. Why? We depend on Krishna. He's got everything. He's right here in the temple. Where else do we need to go? We should understand everything that needs to come will come. We're self-sufficient. We can be independent. We therefore don't have to kowtow or flatter materialistic people. We're self-satisfied. No desires to be fulfilled. Therefore, we don't have to go anywhere else. We can just sit quietly and chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada gives a definition of a devotee, a Vaishnava. Vaishnava is one who can sit down anywhere, anytime, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And all they ask, little prasadam, somewhere to lay down at the end of the day, and if there's a little service to do, let me do that. So that is the python mentality. Who else can do that? Even the yogis cannot imitate the devotees with that level. You know, they're searching after mystic cities and this and that and so many things, or, you know, liberation and so many things, and the karmis are searching after so many things. Devotees have to become a little service of Krishna, Tanya Hare Krishna, a little prasad, etc. That is the way of the python. And with full faith in the destiny, you know, everything that's allotted will come. Verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Do we have a Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 9. Okay. So, you know, if we look at
chapter 12. And chapter 12 is called devotional service. And yet the same principles here described under the python of a type of Paramahamsa Avaduta activities of Rishab are mentioned under devotional service with Krishna. Therefore we do follow them. And you can always tell if we follow something. Is it in the bag of the Gita? Someone says, oh, we don't follow that. Oh, excuse me, sir. The bag of the Gita says this, so we must follow it, because we follow everything in the Gita. There's nothing we don't follow in the Gita. So if a devotee says we don't follow that, you just say, well, excuse me, sir. Just mention a verse in the Gita you may want to hear. He says, start from verses 13 to 14. One who is not envious but a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and free from the false ego, who is equal both in happiness and distress, who is tolerant, exactly what we've been talking about, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged, this is Bhagavad Gita 13:14, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. In other words, if we follow these principles of Rishabh, like the python, we're exhibiting these qualities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and we become very dear to Krishna. And then he says, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, exactly like Rishabh, who is equiposed in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. See? Self-sufficient. Who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. And you covered in still, is that inauspicious or auspicious? Well, in his case, it allows him to follow the avaduta process perfectly, and it protects the rascals who are harassing them from themselves. It's a good thing for everyone. It's a good thing for them. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equiposed in honour and dishonour, so they're calling in names, they're throwing things, they're spitting at him, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always alone, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residents, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service, such a devotee is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage himself with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. There's no way that anyone can say that we do not follow these principles of Rishabh Dev, because they are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita under the title of devotional service, activity by activity. There's only a few things we don't imitate, you know, the neglecting our, you know, cells and our clothing and being dirty. We don't do that because we're preachers. We don't try to imitate the extent to which the Lord can perform his activities. You know, our stool doesn't, smell like roses, so don't try to imitate Lord Rishabh Dev in any of those respects. And we do monitor our behaviour and emotions according to the environment, people in the environment. So, you know, there are some main distinctions that we do because we're preachers. Otherwise, exactly all of the principles he is following, we are following. people came. So we'll leave it there today. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, I feel very confident, actually, that, you know, the devotees who, you know, use the taking the time to study these things properly, that, you know, when people ask you the questions, that, you know, you can give them the proper answers that should be there from the Bhagavatam. You know, what we quite often get is, you know, a lot of people who actually sit and give classes, even, you know, in the various temples around Australia and the world, is that quite often, and even among senior devotees, when they come to different verses, I mean, you can fill up an hour, you can fill up 45 minutes and say all sorts of things, and they're all interesting things, but actually they don't really tell you, you know, properly, you know, you don't actually get the proper philosophy of the Bhagavatam. You may get it related to other things or other things like that, you know, other verses or other shastras, some nice stories, some funny things, keep it entertained. But, you know, to be able to explain the Bhagavatam, if you can get devotees who can actually do that, stick to the verse, you know. Like, you know, there's a verse there. When a verse comes up and you've got the opportunity to speak on that verse or that pastime, that saintly person, that incarnation, you know, you stick to that topic and explain it properly, because, you know, that's the service that Lord Chaitanya is given the opportunity to do, and you take it that, yes, okay, there is a subject matter here that the Lord actually wants explained, and explained properly and correctly in our parampara like that. Not that I'll talk about other things, because I've got, you know, I've got the seed, everyone's looking at me, so I'm getting plenty of attention, that's all I really want. But I don't really, you know, I'm going to talk about all sorts of other things. I've seen devotees, you know, on Lord Ramchandra's appearance day. I saw one devotee one year. They started talking about Lord Ramchandra. And then, you know, one of the guests said, oh, no, that, you know, that wasn't, that was such and such, you know. And then he goes, and then he starts talking about, oh, no, that wasn't, you know. And, you know, this is one of the guests. The guest is correcting, you know, one of the senior devotees here at every step, every time the devotee said something. And I was doing the Abhishek, and I was thinking, you know, this devotee hasn't even read anything today, and I don't know how they get through so many years and they can't remember something. But actually, the person, the devotee, got corrected throughout the whole thing. And then, you know, after, you know, many, many corrections, then started filling up the class with, you know, things that were not remotely related to Lord Ramchandra at all. And that was a very senior devotee. So please don't become like that. You know, take the Bhagavatam seriously and, you know, study it. Each and every word, each and every verse, you know, try and, I think most of you are doing very well, you know, and if you just keep continuing as you are, then we'll have a very good group of preachers. Excuse me. I'll just get them. All right, shall we leave it there? Yep.
I just like to know. You know, this Nada Sagi 2.14 has an often quoted verse for tolerance, right? So in Bhagavad Gita, do you have any often quoted verse for humility and
well, probably 8.13. Where's that Gita? Humility.
Yeah.
13. It says, and humility. Now, Srila Prabhupada mentions starts off, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of a field of activities, but actually this is the real process of knowledge. So here we're talking about the process of knowledge, and as Prabhupada mentions that he says, as for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analysed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honoured by others. Not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honoured by others. Because we know we're not the body. So that's how you practice. Honour and dishonour attained to the body is useless. In many places when Prabhupada refers to humility, he says that humility is the first principle of knowledge. So, somewhere in here he mentions that, and quite often in his lectures when he's referring to these verses, he will make that statement that, you know, the first principle of knowledge is humility. So, when a devotee is known to be very knowledgeable, but they lack humility, and humility is the first principle of knowledge, it means that their knowledge is has an incorrect foundation. Something faulty about that knowledge is, you know, the person may be very knowledgeable of what's in the Bhagavad Tums, what's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, verses and things like that, but it's the twisting of the philosophy due to a lack of humility.
Presenting as it is.
It's not there. When a devotee is proud, when a devotee is proud, generally what they like to do is to, they don't like other devotees to be above them. They like to be above as many devotees as they can. That's one of the, it's the satisfaction of being honoured by others. That's pride. I want that satisfaction. To get that satisfaction, I have to be above as many devotees as I can, and I get more of that satisfaction coming. The more I'm below other devotees, they're getting the credit, or they're in the limelight, they're getting the influence, or what have you. It means I'm not getting the satisfaction. So really, pride means you want the satisfaction, you've got to be above as many. And therefore, there's a twisting of the philosophy to achieve that platform. That means that devotee will commit, perform activities in an offensive way to other devotees, to drive them away, to suppress them, to belittle them, to criticize them, and they will be able to support each and every one of those activities from the devotee.
this guru and that guru and this Bhagavatam and this, that and the other to support their activities even though they're committing so many offences in this world. And, that, and in order to belittle devotees, increase, you know, one way to raise yourself up is to drop everyone down. In order to criticize, you actually also have to, it's like I've mentioned before, one time when I was doing a wedding, it was Durga Puja Day. So a devotee, had a discussion with the management. The Ganga is now doing Durga Puja. Worshipping Durga. So, in order to, there's a definite lack of understanding of Krishna consciousness to be able to, take the road he'd been doing the same thing for 4 years and say, he's now, gone off the road and doing Durga Puja. You really have to twist the philosophy a lot, or have no real understanding of it. So, humility is actually, if a devotee has humility, you can say that that devotee actually has a proper understanding of the philosophy, concomitantly with that development of humility. And humility is, in fact, the Shushastakam, those prayers describe the progressive phases a devotee goes through before they get to the next stage. And each stage is based upon the previous qualities and faith and realization being present and developing more and more as each stage goes. So in other words, the humility at the beginning may be very little. When they get to the stage of Nishta, fixed up devotee, that's Trinada Pisi Nichina. That's called fixed up devotee, that's Nishta. Humility doesn't stop there. Okay, we've done a bit of humility. Let's move on to the next part, but I don't need humility anymore. Actually, in the next part, when the devotee gets to a Shakti in Bhava, the humility increases. So, and without humility, one can't say Nishta Bhakti. Yeah? One can't claim, advanced devotee, but I jumped over Nishta and got to the advanced stage. It doesn't happen. Humility is like, that's the foundation. Okay, we're a bit steady as a devotee. And if a devotee is operating without that humility, they're not even needed. Let alone advanced to it. So it's not a matter of I've been around 4 years, 10 years, or what have you. It's do you have humility and therefore attain Nishta? Do you see yourself as a spirit soul, which is, Nagaman, Narjan, Narsimhamun, like that, and you only want devotional service because you're off the bodily platform? So these things, it's not the amount of time, it's the actual state that the devotee attains. So, this is a very nice definition. That's all, by that definition there Prabhupada gives, you can sort of really, look at a devotee and see who's searching for attention, adoration, profit, like that, and you can say, okay, there's something, there's some humility there, obviously, but it stops at a certain point, doesn't it? Who's the first with your son on the, when there's 500 people watching you give the lecture? Who's going, whether you've studied it or not? Let's see. Is it about, teaching people about Lord Ramchandra, or who's going to actually sit in there? So, anyway, I'll leave it to you. You can judge these things. Alright, I'll flip this board. Does anyone want to take pictures?
Thank you.
Yeah. We hear this point so many times that, it comes up in Bhagavad Gita, it comes up in Srimad Bhagavatam, that one should be equipoised in happiness or distress, understanding that it is come and go.
Yeah.
that is the point of being Python, and one should focus on auspicious consciousness because it's kind of happiness and distress. I mean, we hear it so often, it's almost a cliche, but its practical application is something else.
That's right, yeah. And and you know, that's what you know, where we try to get Krishna's attention by you know, practicing, you know, Krishna consciousness at a more surrendered level. You know, preparing to put ourselves in a position where we have to be a lot more tolerant than we'd really like to be, or, you know, we usually are. being, you know, a little bit more humble than, you know, we have to step up a couple of notches of humility in order to deal with the circumstances. So, as Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura used to say, don't act in such a way that you will see Krishna, act in such a way that Krishna will see you. So, you know, when a devotee understands that if I really, you know, practice that tolerance and humility, you know, on a higher level than what I had before, you know, just extend myself where I would usually not tolerate, now I'm going to try and tolerate. But the humility and tolerance of a devotee is not practiced where in such a way that it's actually harmful for the devotional service. In other words, you imagine, you take the position of Srila Prabhupada where he was criticized by his own godbrothers that he's doing the wrong thing, that he's not qualified, that he's not authorized, that, you know, he shouldn't be giving Harinam Diksha to these people, he shouldn't be giving them Brahman, he shouldn't be having women. He had a service to do and he was being criticized. His humility was not that, okay, I'll take the humble position, you know, you say I'm not qualified, I'm not the acharya, so I'll stop. You know, I'll come back and I'll be your servant and maybe one day you will go. No. His humility and tolerance was that I will stay fixed in this service. You just try to stop me. You can criticize all you want. you can do what you like. Sabotage me, try to stick a knife in my back. I will not give up the service despite the trouble that you cause me. That's humility. To stay fixed in your service. You know that Krishna wants you to perform that service. You're authorized to do it, and despite what anyone says, you're going to stay fixed in that position despite all the trouble. That's humility. Not humility that, oh, you know, so many people are saying I'm not qualified to do this and I shouldn't be here, therefore I'll just give it up and I'll just go somewhere else and I'll, you know, I'm just insignificant and, you know, I don't have many good qualities, so I'll just stay away and I won't do it. That's not humility. That's actually pride that, you know, I don't want to be, I don't want my body to be insulted in this way. I'll go to a place where, you know, where I'll accept false praise rather than you know, criticism. It's very easy to, you know, find a place where you get false praise, and people have actually disturbed the service that you really should be doing. So humility is, you know, it can be a little difficult to understand, but basically staying fixed in the service you're supposed to be doing, that's the humble position. And that humble position, why? because you've got to tolerate so much and you're going to be criticized and you're not going to get any praise and you're not going to get any recognition, you know, and you're going to get all sorts of problems, but you know that this is the service I'm authorized to do and they want me to do, and it's really important. Just like we used to go out and, you know, we used to sell paintings, we used to sell candles and what have you. And devotees from all over the world used to criticize us. But, you know, we paid for this temple to be here. I was talking with Prabhav, you know, Prabhav. We were having a chat the other day. We were chatting about that. I think so, yeah. He also, you know, in the early days, so much sankirtan. We were talking about, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that, you know, we used to bring in. And he was saying that no one even, you know, people come to the temple these days and no one even looks at you as, you know, they have no idea that, you know, these temples are here because devotees went out and did that. But, you know, while we were doing that, we were criticised within Australia, we were criticised outside of Australia. Oh, you should be selling books, you're just out there getting money to pay the bills. You know, Mayapur, you know, the amount of money that Australian Yatra, you know, put into Mayapur so that devotees could go there now, you know, you couldn't get the same result, you know, from doing anything else. But, you know, there was a lot of criticism, and we were criticised by the non-devotees, and to get the money we had to wear wigs, so we criticised, and we criticised by the authorities, you know. I've been thrown in jail 3 times just for being a Hare Krishna. You're criticised by the pujaris. They're thinking, oh, you're out in the street dressed in kamis, you know. And we're thinking, yeah, but, you know, we're paying for you to eat nicely and sleep nicely at the temple. Yeah. But the point was that the humble position was just, you know, someone had to pay the bills in those days. We didn't have a congregation. We didn't have a congregation who would give us, you know, enough money, you know, that we could have a feed, you know, for a couple of days in a week. We actually had to go out and get a lot of money and to put on the Rath Yatras. Just like, you know, when they had the 50th anniversary, they showed the Moomba program. There was not one mention of any devotee who actually collected that. I used to go out from morning to night, you know, very difficult work, for years to make sure that devotees could spend as much money as they wanted from up above and put on some big... And we were hardly even invited to go and see it. You know what we had to do? We weren't even able to go and see the Moomba Pro. We had to go out on Sankirtan because the bills would keep coming in. There's no credit. Still to this very day, no credit. For you know, we paid for it. The people who spent the money and ate the Mahaprasad in back of the temple get the credit. That's the humble position. But there'd be no Rath Yatra. If you relied on the people in the offices, you wouldn't have a Rath Yatra because they had no money. The money was the people who went out and earned it. But those people, to this day, got no credit. Not in the 50th anniversary, not in the 100th anniversary, not ever. It will never be stated.
How do devotees maintain consciousness
in such a situation? Well, like we're learning from here, because you've actually got to have something within. You've got to actually believe that. You've got to understand Krishna's there. He's watching everything you do. If you don't believe in Krishna, and that means you've got to get some result from the material world to this body. Give me some fame. Give me some credit, like that. If you understand, it doesn't matter about what happens to this body. Because
it's not necessarily about fame, but to be criticized constantly.
Yeah, you have to. That's part of the nectar, in one sense, that you understand. We know that Krishna's watching, and Krishna knows, oh, you're going to go through all this criticism. You know, you're doing the right thing, and still your criticism, you're going to do that for me. We get that nectar. No one else. You won't get that nectar sitting in an office, doing this, that, and the other. You know, there's a certain nectar as a Sankirtan devotee. Sankirtan devotee generally, you know, if you do Sankirtan, it really teaches you humility. many different ways.
Was it also under Balaram's time also this you're mentioning, or is one other
Under Balaram's time, all these things were actually, even Balaram, you know, very nice devotee, he gets no credit. His name's not even mentioned ever. Even, you know, he was one of the, you know, he was a very nice devotee. You know, and he gave wonderful classes. He had wonderful realization. He was a real gentleman, and he also was an old Sankirtan devotee. You know. We used to have Sankirtan meetings each week, and we would, as Sankirtan devotees, we would sit. We'd, you know, count up the money together. You know, we used to fold each note straight. If it had a little bend in the corner, we'd, you know, because we put a nice mat, just like they got the flowers on the mat here. And it was, to us, it was Lakshmi. You know, it wasn't money, it was Lakshmi. We had liberated Lakshmi from Ravana and Hiranyakashipu type demons out in the material world. We brought her back to the temple, you know, where she's with Krishna. That was our move, you know, that was our understanding. And we used to get each note and put it in the proper order and the proper way like that and look after it, you know. And we'd have a Sankirtan meeting, we'd tell different Sankirtan stories. So amongst the Sankirtan devotees, you know, we sort of... And Balaram, he was good. He, you know, in those days... you know, when it come to, you know... Balaram was good, but still, it was a little bit like that, you know. That really, the devotees who, you know, basically spent the money still, you know, got the biggest credit. I mean, Sankirtan was very hard. I told this story, you know, when I was robbed, I got this tooth knocked out of my head, and, you know, nose was cut, my lips were out here, my eyes was all black. I mean, I looked like, you know, Frankenstein's brother. And I think I got one day off Sankirtan. You know, that was the pressure we were under. You know, you can't take a day off, you can't take half a day off. Prabhupada was telling me a story about that as well, you know, just, you didn't get days off. I remember one time I had an operation on my knee in Perth. I told the temple president, I said, I can't walk out on Sankirtan and my leg's about to completely give way. And he said, that's Maya, you get out there. And then on Sankirtan, my leg collapsed and I had to go to hospital and they did an operation. And the next morning, the temple president had come into the hospital and told me to get out of bed because I was in Maya and get back to the temple. Which I did. And if you didn't do that, they would kick you out of the temple. They would give you a bad name. And when your spiritual master came, they would tell you you're a rascal. And in those days, then, you know, if you wanted to get married, they're not going to give you a wife. You want to go to India, you're not going to go to India. You're going to do it hard. You're going to do it real. You think you're doing it hard then. You're not going to get any butter on your muffins after that, that's for sure. We used to, you know, the temple president over there used to do this thing where we'd cook muffins for breakfast and you'd have your khichdi. So he was allowed to have, so we'd eat in the circle. There's only about half a dozen of us in the whole temple, we'd eat in a circle. So none of us were allowed to have butter or anything on our muffins, but he would. So he would sit there and he'd butter his muffins and put a bit of honey and this and that and the other, like that. We were saying, we were not allowed to have butter or anything like that. And when we had a Sunday feast, sometimes they would cook extra, like, you know, they'd cook a cake or something. We'd think, oh, you know, because we just didn't get things like that. And then we'd think, oh, after the feast, there's a little bit left over. And he'd come up to me and he'd say, take that next door and distribute that to the neighbour. We weren't to have it, you know. It was really, really... But anyway, in fact, one time the GBC, who was Hari Sori, who was Prabhupada Kripa Maharaj in those days. They come over because actually the wife of the temple president, who now has a big movement on the internet, she's within ISKCON, but she has a big movement, Penelope. What's that? I won't say. She asked me, you've got to do something about him. It's like no one can stand it anymore. And I'd written a letter to the GBC and they actually come over. And they asked me different questions about what was going on and answered. And the GBC, Prabhupada Kripa Maharaj, he said to me, he said, you must be Krishna conscious, Ganga. You've lived for 2 years in this temple, which was a long, you know, no one else could do that. Everyone else took off as soon as they could. He says, you must be Krishna conscious. And therefore he accepted, you know, what I said. Because no one else could do that, no, you know, it was like a big thing. 2 years in that temple with that temple president, you have to be humble. So, but yeah, you know, there was, you know, a lot of tolerance, a lot of difficulties. I remember one Radhastami. We were out in the, you know, somewhere hundreds of miles, maybe 1,000 miles up north in West Australia doing Sankirtan. And Radhastami was coming up, and we rang it a day or two before, and we said, can we come home to the temple for Radhastami? And he said, no. You stay out there and collect. You know, so they were desperate times because we really didn't have any money in those days. You know, we didn't just buy flowers, you actually had to pick them from people's gardens, you know, on your way home from Sankirtan. But they really needed the temple, but at the same time, you know, sometimes things went over the top. And so there was three of us out on Sankirtan. And I said to, you know, the other two, I said, we're going to have Radhastami. We're going to have it out here. And so what we did is we went shopping. We, you know, because we had all the Sankirtan money, and we bought all this boga, and we cooked for a whole day. So there's three of us, and we cooked. We all cooked. We cooked, you know, and we sat down. We offered it to Radha on her Radhastami. We had so much prasadam. We, you know, we ate the prasadam. We had so many preparations, and gulab jamuns and this and that. You know. We, you know, we had enough for like 100 people. We ate as much as we could. And then after that, we had a gulab jamun competition. And that's when I ate over 100 gulab jamuns. And that was after that feast. I counted 140. And the devotees who witnessed that, you know. And I always felt that, you know, Radharani gave me a special mercy that day because I wasn't even, you know, allowed to go back to the temple. And you know, basically we were paying for the whole temple. And, you know, I really felt the presence on that day. It was probably the best Radhastami I've had. I really felt that, you know, Radhastami says, oh, well, you can't come back to the temple to see me. I'm going to come and see you. Yeah, it isn't like that. Otherwise, who can eat a feast like that and eat 100 gulab jamuns? And every time I was eating, I was thinking, I'm getting Radharani's mercy. There's more Radharani's mercy. There's more Radharani's mercy. But you know, you know, that's why I say humility and tolerance means, you know, you have to be fixed up in your service despite the difficulties. You know. Well, he went to I think he's somewhere up in Surfers Paradise or something like that. You know,
is he practicing Prabhupada?
I don't think so. Not as far as I know. I don't think so. I mean, you never really forget Krishna as a devotee, but I don't really don't think he's practiced. Yeah, there's a lot of, but it was the way he was removed as a temple president which broke his heart, and he never got over it because he was actually a nice devotee, did a lot of things, and you know, this is sometimes you see that. You know, it's probably easier when you, you know, as so as the temple president, he was getting a huge amount of respect and adoration from people all over the world and here. And, you know, when that respect and adoration stops, then do you have the humility, you know, to, you know, are you living off that adoration, you know, because if you can no longer maintain, you know, your devotional service, then, you know, the person may not have developed the humility to the point that they actually need it, even though they were getting a lot of adoration. You see? As I said, you know, a devotee, even though there's some very harsh treatment, you know, sometimes meted out in ISKCON, but still a devotee wouldn't give up their position as a servant of Prabhupada. That humility, that level of realization, humility and tolerance would have to be there. That how can I give up the service of Prabhupada?
But also they say that Krishna never gives a devotee a testing party.
Well, then perhaps he should have remained and, you know, a devotee... you know, someone may be able to take the test, but they may, you know, chuck it in, not do the test. You know, the test is, okay, you need to now show us a little bit more tolerance and humility. You know, you've been smashed to pieces, even though you've done such, you know, you've been wrongly smashed to pieces by the whole community. Even though you've done such nice service, the test is, can you develop the humility to deal with that and tolerance? That's a big test. So, then, you know, the question is, if that saying is correct, that Krishna's not going to test you beyond what you can do, that means that he had the ability, but, you know, decided not to, just to chuck it in.
Easy to give up,
do yeah. You know, it's like sometimes you're in a race and you're running. The little children do this, they're running and they see someone in front of them, so they give up. Instead of, oh, I could probably get in front of them. As soon as someone's a little in front of them, I'll give up. You know. Actually, they probably, if they keep running, they could, you know, do it. So, you know, there's a giving up, even though they probably could, you know, come to that platform and like that. So, you know, that is there. That is voluntary. All right then. Okay. Hare Krishna.